weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
One of the many Saturday afternoon sessions at the Festival of Ideas is about the role of visual media in the environmental debate. Pleased to say the chairman is here, the director of the University of Cambridge Conservation Research Institute, Bhaskar Vira. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for coming
it's
in.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me, the Festival of Ideas sort of encompasses a whole load of subjects, really. How does your particular session fit into it all?
So this year's festival is all about power and resistance, and it's a two-week festival with a number of talks, events across the city. What we're focusing on is the very powerful role that the visual medium is increasingly playing in our awareness about environmental issues, as well as our willingness to act on environmental issues. So what this debate is really going to focus on is the entire spectrum of the visual medium: still photography, documentaries, and documentaries take on a number of different forms. You've got the very beautiful fluffy bunnies, all that kind of stuff.
Now, fluffy bunnies are good.
But you also have much more gritty stuff, you know, really powerful, hard-hitting documentaries which are urging people to take action.
Yes.
We really want to explore that entire spectrum.
It's quite an interesting range, really. It's a shame. We were hoping to have Toby with us, the photographer, who's also on the panel, but I gather he's stuck in London, unfortunately, tonight. But one of the things about still photography, sometimes a still picture can be just as captivating, if not more so, than, I don't know, a half-hour film on something, just by the sheer expertise and, of the photographer.
Absolutely. And if you don't mind, I'll sort of plug Toby's show, which is
part
of the Festival of Ideas. So he's exhibiting for 2 weeks during the Festival of Ideas, and his exhibition is on at the main festival venue, which is in St. John's College at the Divinity School. And it is really all still photography, and it's a very, very powerful illustration of what you've just talked about. He focuses on two parts of the power generation scene: coal-powered power stations and the big cooling towers that we've all will remember, and how he's been able to communicate those in an aesthetic way, but also the power of those over the landscape. And the second bit of his exhibition is about hydropower in Scotland and, you know, these big dams, but how they sit within the Scottish landscape. So there's the beauty of it, but there's also a very, very deep message about our reliance on these forms of energy.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I know that there's always, whenever there's wind turbines are planned anywhere, there's always protests about them. But you go to a place like the Netherlands, for example, and, you know, just in the same way that their landscape used to be, and frankly still is, dotted with the traditional windmills, there's wind turbines absolutely everywhere. And in a roundabout way, you kind of think to yourself, well, this is just taking forward what has always happened in that country.
Absolutely. And, you know, you see this across continental Europe a lot. You know, I remember sort of being in Germany recently and seeing a huge wind farm from outside the train. And actually, to me, that looked like a really powerful message about positive progress.
As opposed, I guess, to the industrial chimneys of the north with smoke bellowing out of them and causing goodness knows what amount of harm to the environment.
Absolutely. So, I mean, what we're going to try and explore is precisely what those images mean to the beholder.
Mm.
You know, a different person would react very differently. For somebody else, and I can imagine somebody living right next to that wind farm might react very differently to me. I was observing it from a train, nicely sealed off. I didn't have any of the issues that somebody living right next to it might experience. So I think the visual medium does lend itself to that kind of interpretation by different people.
And the documentary side of thing is interesting as well. You think of the great David Attenborough documentaries on the BBC. I remember speaking to a guy I knew who was working for the Discovery Channel at the time, and basically his job was to make sure the Discovery Channel was shown in all sorts of countries across Europe. And Discovery Channel had a problem when it was buying documentaries, I think, from the BBC at that time, because they dubbed them. And they got less of an audience than when it had David Attenborough's voice and they were subtitled.
Mm-hmm.
The power of that man against the imagery which he's conveying, even now, and well into his 80s.
So on Saturday, we have somebody from the BBC Natural History who's worked for BBC Natural History, and I think that's really important. I mean, clearly, in his case, it's his voice is so much part of that documentary feel. So it's both a visual medium, but also...
But early on, of course, right, to continue the Attenborough theme of shows like Zoo Quest, I think, was one of his first shows in the very early days of wildlife documentary making. That was giving imagery which nobody had seen before, and there he was right at the centre of the action.
No, absolutely. I mean, he has obviously been an iconic figure in this field. What is really interesting is that, you know, over time, his documentaries have also started to take on subtle political messages. So, you know, he started focusing on things like, you know, he talks about climate change in the background when he's talking about the visually beautiful places that he visits, you know. And certainly his work is reflecting the changing politics around some of these issues. And I guess that's one of the things we want to pick up on the debate. Sometimes areas that are aesthetically very pretty also have underlying them some really complicated political issues around the ways in which people access the environment and use it.
Yes.
And, you know, you almost need to just pan your camera a little to the left and you'll see all the politics, but actually you're focusing on this very pretty scene. So I think it's also partly exploring how the filmmaker is capturing a particular version of reality for the audience, but there are also other hidden layers which are not always being revealed.
Mm. It is interesting, isn't it? Because obviously Sir David Attenborough's documentaries remain very much BBC One prime time. We mentioned Discovery Channel, there's National Geographic Channel, there's obviously the internet as well, where filmmakers can put their work. And I wonder if, to return to our fluffy bunnies at the start of our conversation, you know, we see the fluffy bunnies primetime television, but the real deep, meaningful messages are perhaps sometimes hidden away, specialist channels in the four corners of the internet, and almost preaching to the converted, so that the message is being lost. And I wonder how we change that.
I mean, one of the things that has obviously changed is that technologically it's so much easier for independent filmmakers to get their work viewed, you know, through the power of the internet. You know, you can upload your documentaries onto YouTube. There are these opportunities to actually have an audience, a worldwide audience, through the internet, obviously in places where the internet works. But it does mean that you don't necessarily have the filtering of the editorial content that previously would be the one or two channels that you might get on your television set. We do have access to this information. But I take your point. I mean, you know, the people who are looking for this stuff are probably already the converted. So actually trying to get the message across in a more accessible way to a wider audience remains a really big challenge. And then editorial content filtering becomes important. And inevitably, the editorial decision is about what makes sellable television, unfortunately.
No, this is the same as same as anywhere, really. You know, even us as a community radio station, we have to be popular sometimes. Yeah. Otherwise, people wouldn't hang around for the depth that's hopefully around here as well. I'd like to get your view, actually. An hour or so ago, we had Bill Schwartz in from Fossil Free Divestment. And as you probably know, there's a debate at Cambridge City Council tonight as to whether or not the council will support that idea. I wonder what your view is on that, and whether it's actually technically possible for a council anywhere, really, or any organisation to really support fossil-free fuels and its ability, because you lose the chain fairly quickly, I would have thought.
So the campaigns for divestment have been growing in all over the world, and you know there are campaigns that are focusing on specific large fund holders and councils, local authorities, universities, big pension funds have all been the focus of some of these campaigns. They're making the case that, you know, in any rational view of the future, the 21st century, the world has to transition away from its current dependence on fossil fuels. It's trying to make that message clear through the power of the investment portfolio. What is interesting is that increasingly that ethical message is becoming convergent with the economic message. Oil prices in the last year have gone down very significantly. It's increasingly making less economic sense to have an investment portfolio that includes oil companies for economic reasons. That converges with the reality that oil isn't going to be available for us to burn throughout the 21st century. So we are going to have to transition away to other forms of energy. So there is this interesting convergence happening at the moment between our ethical commitment and the economic reality of these are industries that don't really have a long-term future. Oil companies themselves are beginning to make that transition. They're seeing themselves as energy providers rather than oil-based energy providers. They're starting to invest in renewables, in solar, in other forms of energy. So I think that the divestment campaign is picking up on the pulse which says, what is the future of these industries?
And I guess in a way it's pushing at an open door, because the the most hardened accountant in the in any council office might be sitting there, and based on what you've just said there, I'd say, why are we spending all this money on these type of fuels when if we did this, we could long-term save ourselves money?
So the term that's being used a lot is stranded assets, that this type of investment is investing in things like coal, which nobody wants to dig out of the ground anymore. That's a stranded asset. The oil that we have, the oil that we already know exists, is not going to be burned in our lifetimes, because if we did that, we would put the planet on a path to warming that would be just unsustainable. So later this year in Paris in December, there's going to be the climate change conference, and there will be targets agreed which will make it very clear that we will not be able to burn all the oil reserves that we already know about. So these are stranded assets. Do you want to invest in a stranded asset, or do you want to switch your portfolio towards something that has a productive future in the 21st century?
Okay.
So I think it's a pretty strong message there. Obviously, individual investment managers have to make those decisions, keeping everything in balance. But I think the divestment campaigns have a lot going for them. There are also campaigns which are focusing on what they're calling positive investment, which is really redeploying your portfolio towards things which are good for the planet.
It takes us back to our wind turbines Germany and Scotland and the Netherlands.
Invest in the positives is a really strong message.
Mm. And it's a really, really interesting area. I could probably talk for some considerable time on if we had the time to do so. Remind everybody as to when the talk in the Festival of Ideas is.
Saturday the 24th, 3 p.m. in Mill Lane Lecture Theatres, and it's a panel discussion on the roles of the visual media in environmental debates.
Okay, well, I'm sure many people go, I have an awful feeling that I'm doing one across town at exactly the same time, so suddenly discover that we're rivals. But I'm sure many, many people will want to go and listen to what's a really, really fascinating topic. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's Bhaskar Vira, and that talk is Visual Media in the Environmental Debate. And as Bhaskar said, it's taking place as part of the Festival of Ideas on Saturday afternoon.